I recently became aware of how my pronunciation of the word roti was different. It was early June, and I was sitting at this Asian fusion dive bar, Hawkers, with some friends from school. I ordered roti canai for the table. I'd had it before when I first visited the restaurant a few years ago, and was honestly awestruck at the fact that I was seeing roti served at this weirdly hip hotspot in Jacksonville's popular Five Points neighborhood. And the roti was good, too. It reminded me of the flaky, layered roti that my mom would always make in the mornings at home. My friend Isha, who was native to India, jokingly pointed out how I pronounced the R and T in roti differently. It was meant to be a playful jab at my lack of authentic Indian dialect, and we bantered back and forth about our differences in speech patterns. This moment stuck with me, though, in a way that made me think, is there even a correct way to say roti? This interaction and the many variations of it that I find myself having as someone of South Asian descent, Guyanese nationality, and U.S. residency is indicative of the complexities of navigating being part of a diaspora that has been geographically shifted and displaced over the course of centuries. Roti is one of the tangible avenues through which Guyanese culture has preserved itself in the United States, but the roti made in a Guyanese home, whether it is in Georgetown or an apartment in the Bronx, carries implicit meanings. It's more than flaky bread. What I really became curious about, though, in pursuit of this project, and within all the talk about roti, identity, and place, were the belief systems rooted in Guyanese culture that were very much part of my everyday life. Systems that are often communicated through roti making in Guyanese homes, and between the men and women who occupy these domestic spaces. For Guyanese women, roti is an everyday routine. As a child, I woke up to my mother rolling out the dough on the kitchen counter, her hands in fluid motion. She would have been up for a few hours now. This was one fraction of her mornings, but it was a consistent one. This routine was normal, not an aspect of my life that ever allowed room for analysis. As I spoke to Guyanese women in the United States, many of them family members and old family friends, I wondered, how is this everyday routine taught and practiced between the networks of women that develop within this particular community? This conversation is meant to delve into the complexities of gendered knowledge and labor, and the way that roti symbolizes more than just food for consumption, but also expectations of women in the Guyanese household. I spent some of my childhood in Queens's Little Guyana neighborhood. I grew up on 126th Street in Richmond Hill, just a few blocks away from Liberty Avenue, which served as a cultural hub for Guyanese immigrants, among other ethnic diasporas. Little Guyana can be interpreted as a microcosm for what Lisa Lowe calls the intimacies of four continents. In her piece, she describes a mixing of multiple societies and the European and North American colonization of the Caribbean. Though the different cultures that intersect within Richmond Hill expand beyond the Caribbean nations, the same idea of a transcultural hub in which different people have brought different social and cultural practices holds true. At the same time, this community of Guyanese people in Queens serves as a connection to home for the Guyanese diaspora in the United States. I spoke to my mother's sister, Mimosi, who also arrived in the U.S. in the early 2000s, specifically about her experience with food when she first settled in Queens.
Eastern, everything was changing, was different, like, from our country food, you know?
Yeah.
Because everything is ice, everything packed in ice over here. And our country, we have most organic, like, everything, like, fresh from the garden. Everything was simple to get, because in Queens, you get everything very, very fast. But the thing is, it tastes different, because they're mostly cold, like, you know, like in freezer thing, like cold.
The experience of consuming food in Queens as an immigrant was both similar to and different from the Guyanese experience in the Bronx.
It was difficult because when we came, we resided in the Bronx for a couple of years, and coming from Guyana, which was not as populated as the Bronx were, you know, so we had to face with the population, we were faced with the climatic change. We were also faced with the adjustment of the food because we're accustomed to having fresh fruits and vegetables, and, you know, we don't eat like frozen food back in Guyana. Everything was fresh, and here everything was frozen, and it just did not taste right.
That was Auntie S., the mother of an old friend from my elementary school days. She migrated to the Bronx with her family around the time that my own family arrived in Queens. She spoke to me about the difficulties of navigating New York City without the familiar staples that a neighborhood like Richmond Hill might have had.
Yeah, it was very difficult because there was just one Indian store where we reside in the Bronx, and the ingredients were so different, you know, because we did not go to Queens to shop where, you know, Guyanese stuff, ingredients and stuff is readily available. So because we were new to the area, we just had to, you know, use whatever we could have from the Indian store in the Bronx.
Despite these barriers and the unfamiliar cityscape, making Guyanese food at home was still essential.
We tried to cook, you know, the type of food that we had back home. Instead of having fresh chicken back home, we had to cook like frozen chicken, you know, fish was the same thing. We did not get the type of fish that we were accustomed to eating back home.
These accounts of the first moments upon resettling in a new country, the first few meals consumed, the first feelings of homesickness that wash over you. These are the parts of the story that are important because they reveal the complicated position of immigrant families. In her piece, Roti Vision Quest, Trinidadian immigrant and scholar Niyama Sandy describes her own mother's experience of leaving the Caribbean. She recounts in her piece, "My mother has been cooking since the age of 7, so prior to her move, food already played a large role in the way she conceived of herself. It was integral to her identity. In those years when she could not go home, the food served as her method of accessing and performing memories of home." Sandy points out an important aspect of the Guyanese woman's experience with making roti, the way that the act of making and consuming this food, a skill sometimes learned from an early age, also serves as a reminder of and connection to home. This practice of reconstructing home through food is common among immigrants who have relocated to North America. The practice of making roti, as I said before, is routine. Not only does roti making serve as a reminiscent activity, but it is also deeply embedded in Guyanese cuisine and culture. I spoke to my friend Narupa recently, who told me a little bit about her experience of attempting to learn roti making among a community of women.
I tried when I was younger, but everybody always made fun of my rotis because they weren't really round and they weren't that good because I always got the roti stuck on the thing. Like I always added so much flour and I didn't understand why it kept getting stuck. So I kind of quit that part.
It's important to notice how Narupa emphasizes the lack of roundness in her roti. Jillian Richards-Greaves describes this phenomenon in her chapter, The Intersections of Guyanese Food and Constructions of Gender, Race, and Nationhood. Greaves remarks on the expectations of Indo-Guyanese women specifically in saying, "From a tender age, women, and particularly East Indian women, are taught to clap roti, with the ultimate goal of achieving the right constitution, shape, and taste." These expectations are communicated among networks of women who teach one another how to make roti. As Greaves points out in her piece, women spend hours upon end in the kitchen with mothers, grandmothers, and older siblings, learning how to perfect this task. My mother recounts to me her own experience of learning from my grandmother, and how women are expected to know these things about roti from an early age.
Like 9 to 12 when I was 12 and stuff, then she used to knead the flour, show me how much flour, how much water, how much baking powder you put, and how you put it and how you knead it. I used to look at her.
Why did she teach you? Like, is that just something that everyone learns?
Normally, Guyanese people at them time that was in the 70s or whatever, Guyanese people, they always teach a daughter to cook because when you get married and go to your home, you must know to cook for your family. That's in Guyana. That's a tradition with Indian Guyanese people.
Intergenerational teaching acts as the main communicator of customs and values in Guyanese households, and the learning process reveals much more about the dynamics that underlie roti making in the Guyanese home. Most of my interviewees learned how to cook in their homes in Guyana, mostly as teenagers who witnessed their mothers, grandmothers, or older sisters performing the same tasks that they would one day come to inherit. The practice of making roti became muscle memory, but folded into the layers of roti are the messages developed and taught from an early age. Teaching serves as a connection between mothers and daughters and a preservation of culture and knowledge. Cooking roti also serves as a medium for ideas about womanhood and family, rooted in traditional heteronormative beliefs about what a woman's work and place is in the home. When I reflect back on sitting in that restaurant in Jacksonville, I realize how conflicted I felt about my own identity at the time, how my connection with the roti I was consuming was as inauthentic as going out to eat Asian food at a loud bar populated by white people. Do not erase the depth with which roti has permeated my life. My rotis will never be round, but I did grow up thinking that this was the only correct shape for dough. Because roti and its practice can symbolize many things about what women are expected to do, think, and believe, but we are still autonomous in our decisions to continue learning this craft. There is no correct way to say, make, teach, learn, or care.